Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
And a very warm welcome. This is the Motormouth podcast with myself, Harry Benjamin, and Tim Sylvie, where in each show we sit down with a figure from the world of motorsport and dive into how exactly they ended up where they are now. F1 champions, team principals, Formula E, and touring car stars. If there's anyone with a story to tell, they'll usually tell it right here. Motormouth is an app and website where you can catch up with all the latest F1 gossip at motormouth.club and view live timings across a race weekend with our app. We're also proud to be partnered with the Brain Tumor Charity, helping to raise awareness and help find a cure through events like our annual karting race, where you can go head-to-head against professional drivers, all to raise vital funds. For more info, check out motormouthkartrace.com. This podcast is brought to you by F1 Experiences, the official experience, hospitality and travel program of Formula One. F1 Experiences is the closest you can get to the pinnacle of motorsport, and let's face it, any chance to get close to Formula One, we're all over it. Enjoy the very best race tickets and track hospitality, first-class hotels and unprecedented access you simply cannot get anywhere else. For more information on how you can book your F1 experience, visit f1experiences.com, where you can also save 5% on your very own F1 Experiences package by using the code MM11F1E when checking out online. So, what are you waiting for? Experience the 2022 F1 season firsthand with exclusive access courtesy of F1 Experiences. Get booking today at f1experiences.com.
Hello, Tim Sylvie here. Now, today's guest hails from Berkshire in the UK. Now, Harry, Berkshire is obviously home to lovely Windsor, and Windsor is famous for its royal residences and Windsor Castle, which has featured very heavily on the news over the last few weeks because of the Platinum Jubilee for the Queen. So I thought I'd test you on some of your royal knowledge this week. I feel okay. Like you'd be all right at this. So I've got two for you. Number one, what are the names of Prince Andrew's daughters? Do you want some clues or some options?
No, isn't it Beatrice?
And?
Oh, what's the other one? Oh, what's? Did you say you had a clue?
Well, I can give you options.
Oh, give me an option then.
So is it A, Beatrice and Eugenie?
Eugenie, that's it. I knew it was a weird name.
Yeah, yeah. And Beatrice was also the name of Queen Victoria's youngest daughter. So well done. I'll give you a point for that one. Another one. Let's do a sport-based one. Which royal couple used to present the Wimbledon tennis trophies each year?
It wasn't Charles and Camilla.
It was, well, let me give you the options.
Or was it Charles and Diana?
Ooh. Is it A, the Earl and Countess of Wessex, B, the Duke and Duchess of Gloucester, C, the Duke and Duchess of York, or D, the Duke and Duchess of Kent?
I've got no idea who any of those people are.
I haven't either, to be
Wessex.
Fair with you. Absolutely wrong. It's the Duke and Duchess of Kent. And actually, the Duchess of Kent broke with royal protocol one year when she hugged Jan and Avotna. She's probably before you. Do you remember Jan and Avotna? I remember her. That's sad.
No.
She finished runner-up one year and was crying so hard with disappointment that the Duchess of Kent broke protocol and gave her a big cuddle.
Yeah. Oh, isn't that lovely?
Yeah, so well done. One out of two. You're getting better. In fact, that's the first question you've got right in about 55 episodes. So well done, you.
Yeah, usually I Google them really quickly.
Do so. You cheeky bugger. Didn't know that. Anyway, how are you? Any news? How's the flat?
Yes, all good. All very well, thank you. I'm obsessed at the moment with getting my 10,000 steps in because I've realised I really, sometimes you just can't do that. So now, I don't know why it's 10,000, but I've been trying to do that. I'm on 6,500 at the moment, so I've got a halfway, you know, just over halfway.
Yeah.
Yeah, apart from that, that's where my life is at.
Well, your steps are a lot long. Your steps are bigger than most people's steps, so you could count them as double.
You know what? I will do that. We're on 12,500.
Yeah.
Job done.
Job done. Well done, you. Anyway, we're pushed for time this week, so should we get on and introduce today's guest?
I think so. Let's do it.
So at the time of recording, we've just had the 24 Hours of Le Mans, and as everyone knows, it's one of the greatest races on the planet, so we're very excited to have someone who completed the race very recently, and he's with us today. We're catching him fresh off the back of it to get his immediate emotions and reactions. Phil Hansen is an endurance sports car star. In 2020, he became the first driver to win the FIA World Endurance Championship, European Le Mans Series, and the Le Mans 24-hour LMP2 class all in the same year. He's the youngest driver to ever win the WEC title and the youngest British driver to win LMP2 at Le Mans. He was the youngest Asian Le Mans Series LMP3 champion and the youngest European Le Mans Series outright race winner. And youngest outright Asian Le Mans Championship winner. He's a BRDC superstar. He's counted Fernando Alonso as a teammate and is currently plying his trade with Zak Brown's United Autosport. He's surely one of the biggest racing talents this country has ever produced. We're here to listen to his news, views, opinions and thoughts. Phil Hansen, with your incredible racing CV, welcome to the Motormouth podcast.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me, guys.
It's an incredibly long list of achievements already, and you're so young, mate. So thank you for taking the time. Now, we will, for those, I'm sure many of our listeners have watched Le Mans over the weekend, so we'll know what we end up talking about. We won't go straight into that just yet. We'll spare you from that for the minute, but we'll start, as we do with all of our shows, just finding out a bit more about you and how it all began, really. Where did the bug for racing come from? Was it in the family? Did you just watch it on telly? How did it all start?
It wasn't the family. My dad's driving is a testament to that. He's definitely not the best driver on the road and not the fastest. But yeah, I think like most people in motorsport, it's just from the moment I sat in a go-kart the first time. For me, it was quite late. I think I started, you know, really properly racing karts at 14, 15, which is really late for the sport. With kids nowadays starting at anywhere between 3 and 8. You start probably racing them at like 8, but you know, modern day racing drivers have their claim to fame that they've been in a go-kart as young as 3. So I started really late, and from that point onwards, it's been nothing but racing for me.
Was it always going to be sports car racing and endurance racing, or when you started out, did you think, well, Formula One's the goal, or perhaps it was just a little bit too late by then?
Yeah, I think it was a combination of being in the different side of the motorsport paddock early on. A lot of people go to single seaters fresh out of karting, and we jumped into sports cars straight away. And then once we got kind of sucked into this ladder of racing, you know, there's its own LMP3, LMP2, LMP1, the GT stuff, you know, in intertwined and mixed into all that. At that point, then it was kind of too late ever to look at F1, but it wasn't really ever on our radar. From the moment we started racing, Le Mans was always the big one for us. And even when I was racing karts, I was doing the world championship in that engine category that we were racing in, and it was actually held at Le Mans. So I remember walking out the back of the pits, the kart paddock, and it was in a corner complex called karting, obviously, because the kart track was right next to it. So yeah, Le Mans always been the goal.
What an amazing achievement. So Le Mans was the goal to getting there, and what's the ladder in sports car racing? Can you talk us through how you progressed up? So from go-karting, where did you go after that, and sort of what were the steps? Because everyone, it's quite well documented, sort of the single-seater route, but maybe the sports car one isn't so straightforward.
Yeah, I mean, most people that race sports cars do single-seaters. It's very rare for people not to, like me. We jumped straight into GT racing. We did all our testing in like a GT4 car and various other things. And I started immediately racing at club level in the UK in a GT3 car and then a Euro GT3 car. But with a team that was family run and well without, outside its depths. So we were struggling quite a lot in a car that was quite uncompetitive. And we found ourselves in the paddock of the European Le Mans Series as a support series, which is now, you know, one of the most competitive championships in sports car racing in the world. And we then jumped straight into LMP3 over a winter series in Asia, not really expecting to win. But when we did win, you got a Le Mans entry in LMP2. So it gave us no other option apart from to use that Le Mans entry and race Le Mans with that team. We kind of were nowhere in that first year of racing with this team that was, you know, inexperienced to say the least in those GT racing. So when they were racing LMP2 at Le Mans, they were, you know, very outside their depths. And but from that point onwards, we kind of had sussed out what teams were good and began a relationship with United in halfway through 2017 and 2018. And I've been with United since and progressed from my early year in 2018, parts of 2019 as a silver, and then now as a gold rated driver for the last 2.5 years.
How did that opportunity with United Autosports come along? Because they're a very well-known outfit. Zak Brown's involved. How does one go about getting in touch with a team like that? Or did they come to you?
It was kind of fortunate because we were already at that time racing in a car called the Ligier. And there's four manufacturers in LMP2 that you could run. And early on, you could run different manufacturers. There was Dallara, Ligier, and Orica were the main manufacturers. At the time, a lot of the good teams weren't running Oricas, and the Orica cars were winning. They were the fastest cars, the best design, and they had a performance advantage. And when we kind of stopped racing with this inexperienced team called Tokwith Motorsports, we were racing Ligier, and the only other team that was really racing Ligier was United. And at the time, there was a Joker upgrade for Ligiers to be able to close that gap to the Oricas. And Ligier were beginning to test and do these development stuff with the diff, and United were running that development. So it made sense for me to do that testing with them and be part of that like development process. And alongside that, we began our relationship with United and then made sense.
And what's Zak Brown like? Because he's a proper racer. He loves his racing. He's all over the globe doing it.
Yeah, and it's funny, you know, sometimes he's actually not at the F1 races because he's taking part himself in some of the historic stuff out in the States. He's a great guy, but it's co-owned by Zak Brown and Richard Dean. Richard Dean's the more hands-on person. I'd say, you know, Zak Brown, obviously, Zak's done wonders with McLaren since he's been there, and now they're, you know, doing a great job in IndyCar as well, and they've just launched their Extreme E stuff. So it seems whatever he touches kind of turns to gold at the moment. United's been through, you know, a long 4 years of racing pretty heavily in the LMS and WEC. But when United moved to Oricas, that's when we started seeing the success. And that, in 2020 specifically, that's when we had our run of fortune and everything seemed to go right.
Yeah,
I mean, it's been a bit more tricky since we finished second in the LMS, and the last two Le Mans haven't gone well.
We've
always been.
We'll come on to your most recent Le Mans, but let's talk success first. Let's talk 2020. And considering you started your racing career so late, it makes that year all the more extraordinary. Take us through your multiple highlights that year.
We started off at Silverstone with a DNF straight off the bat, which wasn't great. One lap into the race and we had an ECU shutdown or something that took us straight out of the race. But as that WEC championship went on, we were hit by COVID. So it was delayed. So it was meant to be a sort of season that started in 2018 and ended in 2019 and ended in 2020. But we nearly ended into 2021. We had like three races where there was a lot of teething issues with the car. Really unfortunate things were happening. You know, we had a race in Shanghai where the vinyl that we have with United sticker above the windscreen somehow came off, and we never have ever seen these issues before. Went straight into the you know where the air goes in for the engine, cracked that carbon. So the, you know, the air that's kind of pressurized because of the speed you're going into that sucks into the engine wasn't really efficient. So then the car was running really rich. So we were down on power. We had all these crazy things in Japan.
Duct tape would have sorted that though.
Yeah. Well, at the time you can't really duct tape it. Yeah, so we had all these things, and then we had a run of straight victories. We kind of won, I think, four races in a row. And it was actually, we won three races in a row heading into Le Mans, and we're thinking, God, like, this is too good to be true. There's no way we all win Le Mans as well. And then we got to Le Mans and dominated that year. And yeah, consistently have been at the front since, just not managed to get the results because of various issues, you know. Luck is opportunity meeting preparation, and we've had preparation and we've been there, but we haven't quite relinquished the opportunity.
Well, let's talk about Le Mans 2022 then, because it's just happened last weekend. We've beaten around the bush long enough, and because clearly, you know, and United have seen the talent that you are, and you've risen up the ranks, not only with them, but through the classes. And as you were saying, you know, working up the driver rankings as well in endurance sports. But well, didn't even make it to turn one, unfortunately, on that one of a 24-hour race in the gravel is not where you want to be. Talk us through what happened from your point of view, because from the replays, it just looked like, well, it wasn't your fault at all.
Yeah, the 6 seconds of Le Mans, unfortunately. the other guys didn't get the memo that it was a 24-hour race, apparently. Yeah, I mean, it was just... What a shitter, really. I can't lie. I don't really know how else to put it.
How do you then, because you got back into the race, albeit you were three laps down, and it was very much a case of just salvaging whatever was possible. And it was a fairly quiet Le Mans race, actually, in terms of, you know, previous ones. There weren't that many safety cars. There weren't many.
Just our luck.
Yeah. I know, exactly. So how do you keep that motivation in you when you know that, well, a lot of things have got to go wrong for other people for you to even try and get back in with a chance, and you're out even before turn one? How do you keep that motivation to go back and do it again?
I mean, part of me was thinking we had such a fast car and we had it in testing, and we didn't maximize it in qualifying. We were really out qualified, but the race pace of the car was phenomenal. In the night, I was in the practice, it was really, really, really fast, and couldn't quite work out why or how everyone had just slowed up or why I had gone so much quicker. So I was feeling confident that we would be able to come back, and with cars dropping out of the race, with issues and safety cars, for sure, maybe we'll be in the top 10. And like you said, it was a real quiet Le Mans, just our luck. I mean, we don't want to wish, you know, bad things to happen onto anyone else, but kind of was expecting something.
A quick interruption to the show to remind you to check out our sponsor, F1 Experiences. F1 Experiences offer a wide range of packages that come direct from Formula One, giving you a unique experience of the pinnacle of motorsport. Official ticket packages come with the very best race tickets, first-class hotels and transfers, and unprecedented access, including track tours, pit lane walks, VIP hospitality, and loads more. It really is the closest you can get to Formula One, and Motormouth listeners can save 5% on your next F1 Experiences package by using the code MM11F1E when booking online at F1Experiences.com.
There could have been something could have happened
just,
to help you out.
Just one. Unfortunately, the car that was at fault and hit us that got a penalty did crash on their own accord. And I think I did come across the radio and say that was karma.
Yeah.
I can't lie. That's natural instinct. But I mean, it's racing at the end of the day. So I wouldn't want to, that could have been me too. So it was kind of sad to see someone crash, especially when it's a 24-hour race. But yeah, we were three laps down. We had some damage, which is the worst part, because in these moments you think, well, even if you're out the race, even so early on, we'll still be able to put some lap times in, and we'll just change it into like the competition to see if we can get the fastest lap, fastest 10 average, fastest 10 lap averages. This is the sort of stuff that a driver will look at the end of the race and think, yeah, I've done a good job. But what everyone didn't see is we in that contact, we damaged the side of the car and the floor. And like the conversations in F1 recently, same thing happens at Le Mans with the long straights. If you damage the floor, pretty much nowhere. We were losing somewhat nearly close to a second a lap, which people didn't really understand. So although we were able to change the front end, which was took the brunt of the impact of the start, a lot of the other damage would have taken far too long to repair. We would have lost, you know, 10, 15, 20 minutes in the pits. So it made sense just to continue, even though we were kind of bleeding lap time. But with that being said, we were still quite strong. We were kind of in the mix of the other cars, even having this massive deficit on the straights. But it was a real mental struggle to be able to fight other cars, seeing on the straight the deficit, you know, being in the toe of another car, and as they're slowly pulling away, it's demoralizing. I can't lie.
Yeah, it must be very hard to keep your chin up in that scenario, particularly when it.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It was so out of your hands, and there's nothing you can do about it. And then to have that damage and know that your car is not performing as it should must be hugely, hugely frustrating. Can you try and describe for us, because Le Mans is such a unique race, and racing at nighttime at those ridiculous speeds, can you try and convey the emotions and the sort of visceral feelings that you get when you're racing in the dark, not just alongside cars in your own category, but cars in other categories as well that might be a lot quicker or a lot slower than you? It must be a very intimidating experience.
Yeah, and obviously in testing, we get opened up to the night race, and we have two night sessions, so we're able to start picking up reference points and things change. And when you jump in the race, I had a stint, I think, from about 4 a.m. Actually, I did into the night and then a 4 a.m. stint. Everything changes. You start having to drive off of reference points rather than feeling. So there's obviously very little light at Le Mans. It's one of the darkest circuits we race at. And you're having to pick up marker boards for meters to the apex, little reflecting panels that they put on curbs and things that you know you use. But the difficulty comes when you're racing other cars, which you don't really necessarily experience as much in the testing, because you're quite often backing out to get clear laps to make sure that you can get a good read on the balance and good read of lap time, so you know where you are. But in the race, with all the cars, you know, kind of being around you and having to pass you, you don't realize until you get there how difficult it is with the headlights and things like this, because you genuinely can't gauge if someone's a car length behind or 10 car lengths behind, because your mirrors are just full of a glare. So it becomes racing at the LMP2 is very difficult, because you have to have a lot of faith that they're not suddenly up the inside of you. So there's that bit of experience knowing how good your exit was. Did I make a mistake? Are they likely to have towed up behind me in my car? In this instance at Le Mans, there was a lot of questioning, you know, has he towed up alongside me right now? Because I'm like a parachute on the straight at the moment. And then also racing other classes, you have GTs. It becomes a lot easier to pass GTs because you can almost intimidate them in the braking zone, flashing them in the middle of the corner. They'll hesitate. They might not turn in because they're worried about the same aspect, and they'll open the door for you. Whilst that in the day, they'll often block you because there's certain corners where we might actually hold them up at the apex, given that we're not as fast as we used to be in previous years. Everything sort of changes, but you have to learn on the go, and you have to adapt quickly. And there's not the room anymore for like one or two laps to get into it. You have to get into it straight away. Although we weren't fighting for a victory, we were still pushing as if we were. So your outlap has to be strong. Your first corner has to be strong. And people don't often realize that when I wake up and I I'm ready a stint before I get in the car, just in case they have to stop early for a puncture or whatever. We don't just get in the car and then go. The process of getting in the car itself is very chaotic. It's a 3-2-1 sprint, get in the car as quickly as possible, do up the belts in within 20 seconds whilst the fuel's going in, whilst the tyres are going in. So it's not like you can leisurely build up to it. It's from the moment the car's stopped in the pit box, it's just full adrenaline, max heart rate, kind of jumping in the car.
You can't just amble in, Sunday drive, flick the door open. After you, mate, you get out. Let me just slot a leg in. Oh, hang on, I forgot my water bottle.
The driver getting out has got no issues, because if he knocks a seatbelt down or struggles to get his insert out, it's going to make you even more rushed. Your belts aren't going to be tight. Although, regulationally speaking, all the belts must be tight before leaving the pit box. That's not the reality in practice. You are tightening it.
You practice that change as much as you can.
We do. We do a lot of change. And because the driver lineup is the same as throughout the start of WEC, you get better throughout the year. And my teammates and have all raced and have a lot of experience, especially the silver in the car, Will Owen. This was his fifth Le Mans. So we're all very good in pit stops, which is a relief, because the last thing you want to be doing is getting in a tiny bit more rushed and having a twisted belt or a belt off your hands device. And, you know, you have to send it and go out and try and manage. You do your best you can to tighten all the belts in the pit box or down the pit lane, but then once you're out, you're out.
It's a mega operation, isn't it? And I suppose, well, in this season, three more races left. Monza up next. Short-term and long-term, what are you hoping for the rest of this season? And then going forward more long-term, future in sports cars, what are you hoping for out of that? Of course, the World Endurance Championships sort of changing quite a lot in the next year or so, with hypercars and the GT Pro category and things like that all change. So there's a lot going on at the moment.
Yeah, it is. I mean, short term, the rest of this year, it does feel like the championship's over for us in terms of points. To lose out at Le Mans like we did was a big loss, because we haven't had exactly the best start to the season. We were leading in the first round in Sebring, but all went wrong for us. We finished seventh. And then in Spa, I actually made a mistake. I got in kind of third, got us up to second, but it was a drying track and we were on slicks. And I actually spun, putting us down to fourth. And then with the strategy playing out, we ended up fifth. So a seventh, a fifth, and a tenth isn't exactly competitive, given that we've had the equivalent of 2, 3, 4.5 points worth of races, because Le Mans double points and Sebring was 1.5. So definitely not the strongest start, and there's not many points to be recouped for the rest of the season. There's another 1.5 because there's a 10-hour race and the other two are 6 hours. So there's not enough points on the table really to come back and win the championship, in all honesty. I think mathematically, yes, but you're having to wish a lot of bad luck on other competitors, and too many competitors can still be there at the end. So it's unrealistic. But that being said, we're probably going to still go out and be even more hungry to win, because we have nothing to lose at this moment. And, you know, we want to show what could have been. I think at all the rounds we've been there, and all the testing we've been there, and all the qualifyings we've been there, but we haven't managed to convert that into any results. And I think when you look back through, you can kind of see what went wrong at each race. And a lot of it has been out of our control, like at Le Mans, taken out before the first corner. There's not much we could have done there.
No, hugely frustrating. And looking a bit more long-term, as Harry mentions, the regulations are changing, the cars are changing quite dramatically. What's your future in the sport? Is this you now? Is this the path you want to take, or is there other series and championships that you want to tackle in the future?
Yeah, long-term, this is definitely what I want to do. Hypercars, obviously growing. 2023 and 2024 will be when it reaches its kind of max capacity with all the manufacturers back into it. And that's my ambition at the moment, to get myself a seat with a manufacturer in hypercar and be able to compete for outright victories at Le Mans. A lot of drivers have the same goal, so it's a very it's a pretty tough world in motorsport to try and get yourself into these right seats, especially when there's such a limited number of them and a lot of good drivers out there. But I'm confident I can be one of the people that will get a seat. It's just a question of timing and politics, and making sure that I've got the right relations with the right people when it matters. There's a lot of manufacturers out there with junior programs and with affiliations with teams, so they likely take drivers already with those teams. but also for United Autosports, the team I race for in LMP2, they haven't had any luck with manufacturers, even though they're definitely one of the best teams in the sport. And you know, the way they run is unbelievably professional. The infrastructure they have with the staff and the personnel they have in the team is next to none. You know, it's probably one of the best in the sport. So I'm also holding out for United to get a manufacturer role. Quite often in these scenarios, manufacturers kind of subcontract their programs out to teams that already exist. And I think you hear rumors in the paddock of different teams getting different manufacturing sort of affiliations. So I'm also hoping that United will get a manufacturer support for them to do hypercar in the coming years.
That would be epic, wouldn't it? And I think it highlights just how exciting the world, not just the World Endurance Championship, but endurance racing is at the moment and is going to be for the next few years with this influx of manufacturers and cutting edge technology. You know, everybody wants a seat at that table, but even so, I mean, what a paddock to be a part of in the next few years too. Clearly you're very good at racing. We know that. Have you got any other hidden talents that we might not know about?
I wouldn't say hidden talents. I'm quite into my fitness. I enjoy my CrossFit and things like this. I think that's kind of my reputation in the paddock.
Me and my 10,000 steps is nothing on a bit of CrossFit.
Forget it. Harry, I've seen his Instagram channel. This man has a washboard stomach that I'm immensely, immensely envious about. So I get the fitness thing.
I get a bit of shtick from it sometimes from the other drivers, but it's all in good humor. But it plays off, you know, like at Le Mans. I'm not trying to be fit enough for the whole year of racing in the 6 hours and the 10 hour races, and then you know find Le Mans tough. I want to be fit enough that I breeze through those races, and then Le Mans isn't a challenge anymore for me. Mm. That's my ambition, because I think if I can get to that level of fitness where a lot of drivers aren't, there's going to be there's going to be a physical gain in terms of my performance actually driving. So I'm conscious of that, and conscious about my weight and how that impacts everything. So I guess that it's not really. I wouldn't say it's like a talent, but it's a hobby that I take quite seriously.
So how often do you work out every day?
I do a 3 day, then one active rest, then 2 day, then one full rest. Yeah, so a 7 day split.
That's pretty intense.
Yeah, it sounds about the same as me, really.
And then on the normal days, I do 2 sessions a day. Purely cardio, and then one CrossFit.
Totally on board with that. I mean, it does just sound like your regime, Harry, to be honest.
I'm more of a three workout session a day, really. But really? You know, not everybody can keep up with that. Yeah. please tell me there's something you're crap at. Something awful. It's got to be something you're just like singing, cooking, something.
Oh, there's a lot of stuff I'm bad at. Singing, you never get me to sing. 100%. There's a lot of things I'm not good at, and that's why you know motorsport seems to be the one for me.
Yeah, stick with motorsport.
We'll take that.
Stick with racing and your push-ups, and you'll be fine. Before we come on to our final three questions, which we ask all of our guests, if you could go back and speak to your past self as you're getting started there in your karts, is there anything you could say to yourself that you'd do differently, or are you happy with the way things have panned out?
I think I would always want to be better at certain points in my past and not make mistakes or learn quicker. Ultimately, I would have just tried to flood my old self with my younger self with as much information as possible on how to be quicker or earlier. All the little gimmicks I've learned, personal hurdles I've tackled have been really important. So I would have just kind of tried to fast track my progress, even though, you know, it hasn't really been a slow process at all. But, you know, it would have been nice to have won 2 world championships at this point. You know, I'm greedy. I'm in a competitive sport, so I'm definitely not on the side of taking it slow. But yeah, nothing that jumps out. Probably just say everything that I've learned over the last sort of 5 years in racing at this level. And I guess if I learned it earlier, I might have learned the next lessons also earlier, things I haven't even learned at this point yet. But I'm still growing. Like I'm only 22, so there's still a lot more in me. Yeah. And I'm excited to see what else I'm able to pick up on in the coming years.
It's got to be one of the shortest spans of time that anyone has recorded in terms of picking up racing to winning Le Mans. There can't be that many people that have started as late as you that have gone on to win Le Mans so quickly.
That list of accolades that you read out at the start, it was quite impressive, but I think we might be able to find one more. Maybe this one maybe to add to it, I think there was once a karting article in a karting magazine, which was like Wilton Mill Club champion, as I noticed in the background, to Le Mans in, I think it was a couple of years or something. There's obviously loads of drivers in the world, so I don't want to say it's the fastest rise up to maybe winning Le Mans, but I'm sure it's definitely up there.
It's certainly impressive. We'll have to do a bit of digging on that one and see if we can find the stats on that.
I don't think it'll be the one that would roll off the tongue that well to come in at karting and win Le Mans in the shortest time.
Yeah, really quickly.
Smooth.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's time then for our final three questions, Phil, because we've kept you long enough. Brought to you by our partners at F1 Experiences. Tim, do you want to kick off?
Sure. Phil, what's got you excited at this very moment?
Ooh, about anything or F1?
Anything you want.
Oh, I mean, honestly, it was eating all the food that I wasn't able to eat because I've just finished Le Mans. I can't lie. Loads of dessert and loads of burgers and everything.
Does it take a while to recover from like just the sleep deprivation, or are you pretty back on it?
I'm going to get back on it this evening, but a couple of days off and eating whatever I wanted was definitely nice. I burnt 6,000 calories at Le Mans over the kind of, I say 24 hours, but it's not 24 hours because you wake up the morning of, the race doesn't start till 4 and you don't go to sleep at the end of the race. So it's kind of 2 days.
That's
a lame answer, really, the food part.
When you're an athlete, so food becomes, you know, certainly something you cherish, I imagine. Same for me. When I burn 6,000 calories a day, I'm always straight back to
Have you burned 6,000 calories in your life?
I have walked 6,000 steps today.
calorie a step and you'll be there.
Exactly. Right. How much success, Phil, of your success, do you think is down to luck and right place, right time? And how much do you think is down to just other things like sheer hard work and putting yourself out there?
Oh, difficult one. I think definitely the bulk is the hard work and determination, sacrifice, all that sort of good stuff. That does result in success, but that you need opportunity. Without the opportunity, you'll never have the results. I wouldn't say it's luck, but yeah, like I said, when kind of hard work and preparation meets opportunity is when you get the results. Yeah. We had all the opportunity in 2020. We've had it this year, but even though the hard work has gone into it, we weren't given the opportunity, for example, at Le Mans. It's kind of a what could have been story so far this year and parts of last year. But because the hard work's always there, when we do get given the opportunity, we are winning races or challenging for wins. So I'd say you can't have one without the other, but you definitely need the hard work. And maybe even without the opportunity, if there's hard work, sometimes you'll get the result.
Now, final question for you before we let you get on with your afternoon. What are you scared of?
Oh, probably snakes, honestly. I can't lie. I really don't like snakes. There's not a lot that I'm scared of. I'm quite, like I said, I'm quite a competitive guy. So peer pressure really does work on me, I can't lie. if my friends are jumping off a building, I'm probably jumping off too. But yeah, snakes, honestly, I don't know why. Something about them slithering, it just creeps me out. Oh. Yeah, I'd rather a spider crawling up my arm than a snake rolling up my arm. I don't know about you guys, but snakes really creep me out.
Yeah, as well. And then if you put snakes alongside peer pressure, that's an absolute recipe for disaster.
Yeah, right, honestly, that would suck.
Just a bit.
Yeah, if my friends were taking photos of the snakes around the neck, I would feel like so conflicted. What do I do? I'd probably still do it.
Absolutely not the one. Well, I think we could all sympathise with you on that. Phil, we've kept you long enough. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us on the podcast. It's been great getting to know a little bit more about you and seeing your journey. And as you say, you're so young. There's still a hell of a lot more to do and go on to. So we can't wait to see what you get up to. We'll be watching for sure. We'll have to get you back on soon when hopefully the next step will be to take the World Endurance title as well once again. So Phil Hanson, thank you so much for coming on to the Motormouth podcast.
Thanks a lot, guys.
If you've been listening to this and thinking, actually, I really want to go and experience a race for myself in person, why not do it in style at a Formula One Grand Prix thanks to F1 Experiences, the official experience, hospitality and travel program of Formula One. F1 Experiences really is the closest you can get to the sport. Official ticket packages which include the best race tickets, first-class hotels, travel and exclusive behind-the-scenes access across a Grand Prix weekend, F1 Experiences offer packages like no other. So, to book your F1 Experiences package, head online to f1experiences.com and if you enter code MM11F1E, you'll get 5% off too. Thank you so much for listening to the Motormouth podcast. Do make sure you give us a follow on our socials, Twitter at Motormouth _, Instagram at Motormouth _official and Facebook, just search Motormouth. You can also download the Motormouth app where you can get exclusive video content from MMTV, create your own social profile to interact with other fans and check up on all the latest happenings with whatever motorsport takes your fancy. We're also proud to be supporting the Brain Tumor Charity too, so make sure you check the links in the podcast description to find out how you can help cure brain tumors quicker. Don't forget to like, subscribe and review, and until next time, you've been listening to the Motormouth podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.